The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? I'm super disappointed by everything. Politics is becoming very uninteresting. I don't even know what to say on this show anymore. I'm not satisfied by this whole, there's been a takeover of the right wing. The Republicans are now controlling the government. They're implementing, there's a lot of good things are being done. Immigration, illegal migrants being kicked out, some raising of the prices for the H-1B. Okay, let's put a little bit of sludge. Let's put a little bit of slowdown on those mechanisms that can affect America. But down the line, I don't see a great future for America. I don't see us as having corrected course. And I see so much delusion and so much incompetence out there. I don't know that we can get out of the hole. And you see the Jewish power consolidating under Larry Ellison. He gets the state to force a sale from China to a Jewish billionaire who controls Oracle. That is not sane. That is worse than communism. It's communism at the service of the controlling elite that currently has its grasp over America. And I see positive things that I would like to be able to celebrate. I would like to be able to celebrate that there's some degree of cultural freedom returning to X. But it's like all of it has been contained. All of it has been... It's been contained by Elon. And it's like, okay, now you have Matt Gaetz. You have Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene talking about subjects, and Tucker Carlson talking about subjects that we were talking about 10 years ago. Now what? And Tim Kaye says the 300-pound insemination equals giant offspring. Maybe that's why I'm so black-pilled today. I was shopping at Walmart and I was seeing these ugly females, and I was like, wow, I think I wouldn't inseminate. I think if she approached me, I would have to say no. And it made me realize that I'm getting old. I have standards now. I couldn't inseminate an ugly woman. End of the line, Joel says, is the cultural left versus cultural right an eternal struggle? Does every generation fight this battle in a futile way? Well, yes. And I don't know that it's even a balanced fight. Because if you try to have a theory of history from the 15th century to today, was there really a wave of right wing and left wing? No. What I see is a progression of everything left, including whatever party that you think is representing the right, is representing the left a little more than you would want to. But I don't see a cultural fight. I see just an entropic direction. And here's another black pill. You know, the fact that the political system is just advancing like a zombie in a single direction. And, you know, this is not a right-wing administration. Trump, the Republicans, a right-wing administration, a true economically right-wing administration, first would get the state to be smaller. Second, wouldn't interfere in free competition. When China won with TikTok, they won by developing a product that people wanted. And America has such control over the tech industry, it's worrying. And it's what leads to censorship being so easy. It's all of these groups, these interest groups, controlled by Jewish billionaires and networks, like we've seen in the email leak of Larry Ellison. They check before they promote you, before they interact with you, before they fund your politics. They check if you are supportive of Israel in the exact way that they want. So they are conspiring. They are talking about each other in email, talking to the rabbi. Larry Ellison, a Jewish billionaire controlling Oracle, getting now a free buy basically of a company that has been made technically valueless because it's been made illegal by the U.S. government. And now it's kind of a predatory bankruptcy process where Larry Ellison buys a company that would be otherwise not available in America, not operating at all. So you just created here through predatory corporate intervention, you created a necessity for China to sell, a necessity for this company that owned TikTok to sell to Larry Ellison. And what do we get? We get more consolidation of Jewish biased power. We get more media controlled by Jewish interest who check, and this is what the email leak shows, who check Marco Rubio. Hey, Rabbi, check Marco Rubio. What's his position on Israel? Have you checked? Are you sure? Can we support him? This is how it works. And Trump didn't solve this. That sucks. Because this is what caused censorship before, and it will cause censorship again. We are in a morass of cultural shit. Meanwhile, some people survive censorship, but they're dumb. They're retarded. And I tried to criticize them like I tried to criticize Candace Owen yesterday. To improve the quality, to up the ante, up the standards. And I have this flow of whoever the fuck these people are. They were not on the internet 5-10 years ago. They're newbies, noobs, who really like how Candace Owens' stream makes them feel. JF, it's fun. She's researching. She can make errors along the way, but she's researching. It's fun. Well, no doubt it's fun. Just like the fucking documentaries about the moon not existing on Netflix is fun. Oh, wow. It must be fun to explore a completely unrealistic scenario that doesn't fit with the facts. I'm sure it's fun, but how you feel about it doesn't matter. As long as the right and the conspiracy bent crowds and the people who have a trend to question the system, as long as they can get caught in these swirls of shit, the world will not get better. There is no organized force of change for America, and all there is a gatekeeping that's worse, actually. The gatekeeping of the right is in many times worse, because I don't know if under Joe Biden you end up having a consolidation of Jewish mediatic power. I don't know that you end up having Jewish control of TikTok. Now you have it. Thank you, Trump. Thank you. This is why it's not just a troll operation to say at some point people who are truly interested in a right-wing position and who are disappointed by the Republican Party will have to learn to vote Democrat. You'll have to learn to mess that system up. You'll have to learn to punish this this sellout behavior that we systematically are given by the Republicans. And what is there to say about all those people who are suddenly awakening, but at the same time making sure to play the role of gatekeeping? Tucker Carlson. They're all very strong on basically making the exact same critiques we've been doing of Israel and Israel interference within American politics. But they keep insisting, you know, they keep insisting on, well, that is AIPAC, that is Israel, the Israeli state. And I saw a clip of Nick Fuentes that was analyzing the behavior of Tucker Carlson on this. And it's like, there is also a problem that this idea of a state of Israel as its representatives, it has its agents, it has its forces, it has its billionaires that it can count on, and everything being fungible in the world of money, very often you can have coordinated hive-type reactions where a billionaire in the U.S. will just throw money onto something, onto some cause that happens to be desired by the Israeli interest. And so, yes, it requires a much greater understanding than just the corporate labels that Israel is and the corporate label that AIPAC is. It is that there is a solidarity, a gang-like solidarity between people who have too much power in America. And I don't see the current cultural trend as helping very much. It's like, okay, there is awakening. That's good. You can celebrate it. But do we have a political solution to it? In the end, as long as money can be used to corrupt the state toward the interest of an elite that has a lot of money, how are you going to fix this? How are you going to fix the academia? How are you going to have a political process that works in the U.S. when everything can be bought for so cheap, so cheap? So yes, when you ask me, is there the cultural left and the cultural right an eternal struggle? There's barely a struggle, to be honest. What there is an advance of the left, because the left is the state. And the state is always useful to people who want to corrupt it. So the state grows, and it plays to advantage the players that it wants. And the players that it wants right now are people like Larry Ellison, who's consolidating power. Now we have a TikTok that was relatively opened, by the way. You know, they were very censoring. But because they were Chinese, they didn't really care about actually showing. There were TikToks of Gaza, of the Gaza genocide that has been happening in the last few years. And this is certainly linked to the desire of removing control and acquiring it under the U.S. big tech, which for now doesn't look like Sam Altman, Elon Musk with a Jewish baby mama, Larry Ellison. The Israeli interest in tech in the U.S. are absolutely overriding of anything else. Basically, the only reason a critique of Israel is available at this time is that Elon Musk has the idea that, oh yeah, let them talk. Let them talk. We're going to keep them down with the algorithm. We're going to deprive Nick Fuentes of a check mark. keep them down, but let them talk. That is the only reason there is any sort of free speech left, or something like free speech on the internet. Doubting Thomas says, JF, asymptomatic death. Could the brain stretch time so the last moments feel endless? Perception of dying forever through death has already occurred externally. There is a lot of delusions of that sort. And I believe that this completely misunderstands what the mind is made to do, how the mind evolved, why it is this way, and how, no, ultimately, this is not possible. So there is this, the same happens in a lot of movies and teleseries about virtual universes and contained universes. This whole idea that when you turn the computer off, it's like the moment pauses in time. What's that movie where there's a train? There's a guy on a train. His mission is to defuse a bomb. He's being sent back to that train because he's a soldier whose brain has been basically surgically removed or something. Or his source code. Source code is one example of a movie in which there is this delusion that the pause moment in a simulation is eternity. The pause moment in simulation is death. I'm sorry to... So someone is saying that Streamlabs isn't working for them. I don't know. It's been a while since... Well, it's been... Numali Soybean had sent a super chat 3 days ago. So it was working 3 days ago. Hopefully you find a way to make it work. If not, feel free to send super chats through Rumble. I am on Rumble Live, and we are multi-streaming across the two platforms. We also are available for super chat on Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below and in the pinned message. So sorry to disappoint people, but when you pause a simulation, there is no further experience. The fact that you feel that you are something is generated by a virtual loop in your brain. This virtual loop has a clock. We don't know what the clock is, but it has a clock. It has to have a clock. It has to have a minimal... There has to be a minimal time scale for qualia. You cannot experience something within 1 millisecond because just the sensory processing, the basic seeing of the world takes about 150 to 100 milliseconds to get within the first layers of your brain. So you cannot have a thought that would last a millisecond. By definition, the brain operates at a different rhythm. Now, so therefore, there is a minimal time length of qualia. And it's not a small amount of time, it's a large amount of time. You can only think slowly, basically, is the rule. And if you die, if your brain stops working, you are not extending that feeling forever. To the contrary, the very fact of feeling is a renewed cyclic experience. Like you can feel the world around you. You can feel redness if you see something that's red. You refeel it. You refeel it at a certain frequency. If at a point in time my brain stopped working,
that's content.
Oops. If at a point in time my brain stopped working, I wouldn't forever feel red. And the guy in source code doesn't forever feel happy. He is shut off and he dies. Now, the movie wants you to believe that he forever feels happy. That is not the case. Dux Zenji says, where have you been? Well, I've been on Rumble. And in fact, I'm so annoyed by the people on YouTube who ask where I've been. I may very well return to full Rumble only streaming, because it's like, wow, these people are so stupid. I go to another website and they think I disappeared for years. A Sense of Progress says the UK needs to outlaw financial gifts to politicians. USA also a realistic early goal. I mean, yes, it would be a start, but it's the money will keep flowing. The money will keep flowing. So they always find a way. There's always a way you can pay the nephew, you can pay the wife, you can always pay on the side. And in the US, it's even graver than just the gifts. The gifts are not even the first front, is that the campaigns are made possible by money. The campaigns are made possible by money. And therefore, when Trump goes onto a campaign, he has to sell himself to people who have hundreds of millions of dollars to give to it. Frank Lidom says, Mama JF wants your soul, killer. I haven't killed Mama JF. Sorry that you think this. By the way, for whoever told me yesterday, someone told me on the chat to invite Max Kaser on the show. I invited him. It would be nice to have some interviews back to the show. I gave up on this a few years ago because I got tired, honestly, of the social aspect of it and social networking. And I wanted to explore more depth and more in-depth streams where I dig a specific subject like a shooter or the psychology of a shooter or whatever. So I've been going mostly for solo stream. But yesterday I invited Max Kaser to the show. Hopefully he answers, because someone told me on the chat that he would give me one Bitcoin. One Bitcoin if I get Max Kaser on the show. I think Max Kaser is an illustration of how the world should be and how the world of the internet was. Here's a free thinker. Here's a free mind. I don't know if he would come to my show or if he's a cuck who will succumb to social pressure. But he makes me think a lot about John McAfee. John McAfee had the spirit of internet anarchist. And those were the kind of people who populated the internet early. Those were the kind of people who were weird enough to leave society in 1995, in 1997, and see a big future for what was to become the internet. Now, eventually, the internet attracted all sorts of crap. Frank Idiom says, Mama JF deserves justice. Well, at this point, I will ban you, because it's like you're not bringing any argument. You are just reaffirming your false belief that I have killed Mama JF. I haven't killed Mama JF. If I had anything to do, you can be sure that there's a lot of police out there who would love to put me in jail. There's a lot of police chiefs that would take the scalp of JF very proudly, but I have not. I have not killed Mama JF. I've gone over this so many times across the years with so many details. It's amazing that no matter what you do, the people are following these mainstream media narratives and these narratives of the internet and other cheap creators. It's so sad, because it doesn't hurt me that much. It doesn't hurt me that much that there are millions of people thinking like you, Frank Idiom. But it's sad because it's sad for you. It's sad for you because it keeps you from engaging with a free thinker, a guy who gives enough little of a shit that he can face the internet every day. even if they are deluded people like you, harassing me constantly. Max K says, who is Mama JF? Mama JF was my ex who was appearing very often on the show, delivering her thoughts and coming here and saying, hey, JF, I think this and I think that. And eventually Mama JF went on a trip. And a trip where it would seem that she was planning to leave me or disappear forever. I didn't know exactly the nature of her trip when she left, but it became clear by what she was telling me by phone at that moment. Eventually, 2 days into her trip, she told me by phone, I will disappear forever. You will never hear of me again. If you want me to sign papers or do a call for you, you have 30 minutes left. And so that is the message I've received from Mama JF. 2 days into our trip, she was at this point, she was located at the moment of sending me that SMS, that texto, that text. She was in New Brunswick and I was in Prince Edward Island. And that day she has disappeared. She, exactly like she told me on that text, she will disappear forever. She has disappeared to the point of not being found to this day. To this day by the police. So what can I do? What can I do? Rodilacid says, Mama JF was kind of like Jan on Timcast, always proposing theories that are out there. Absolutely. So she had this kind of hippie schizo brain. Has she been caught by a trucker? Because she's been using truckers a lot for doing these travels. The problem of Mama JF was that she had way too much naivete and belief in the world. It's actually a miracle that she made it alive to me. Because at 26 years old, approximately, I think I got to know Mama JF before she got to me in her life. She took so many risks, traveled without passports sometimes to Slovakia, from Spain to Slovakia to North Africa, just trusting everyone on her fucking way. Like, there's a time at which she went to Morocco. And she trusted a random family of Muslims to welcome her in their home. It's like, you got lucky, Mama JF. You got lucky because she was traveling with such amount of risks. Just random truckers, random people that she would sleep at their home. One possibility is that she is in hiding, that Mama JF actually realized her dream of disappearing from society. And, you know, before leaving, she was reading the Edward Snowden book, Permanent Record. And she was also Googling about how do I change my name? How am I reborn? How can I be reborn? How can I completely change identity? How can I disappear from the permanent record? So she was reading all these things, and she was obsessed with the idea that there were trackers in the cell phone, there were trackers in everything. So one possibility is that Mama JF is out there in a shack, living natural, absolutely zero chips. Probably, I would guess, with some schizo guy. Probably like an ex-schizo guy that just got unleashed from the psychiatric hospital. And they're like Harley Quinn and the Joker just, I don't know, fomenting plans and bombs. If I had to guess, if Mama JF is still alive, she's probably just planning infinite energy machines with some psych ward recent release guy in some shack. that is a possibility. It's also a possibility that she got just raped and murdered by some trucker. It's fascinating how she wasn't found. No evidence was found beyond what I had provided to the police. Basically, everything I knew about Mama JF that I gave to the police, that's just how much they know. You know, that they haven't progressed even one day beyond my last conversation with her. You know, because Mama JF left on June 17th. I conversed with her through phone and text up to June 19th. And June 19th is still the last thing that is known about Mama JF, her last whereabouts. Joe Rinaldi says, did you have your kids with Mama JF? Yes, absolutely. I've made several children with Mama JF. So I find myself a happy single father at this point. Well, someone accusing me of being a rapist. See? We're in a discussion in which I'm explaining the disappearance of my ex-wife. And then there's people who are onto other... They're onto other false streaks. It's, JF gay rapey. Rapish. Rapist. JF rapes. It's like, how do you guys live, you people? What is this? How do you have a space of your brain occupied at thinking that I'm a rapist? It's like, I must have been a pretty successful fucking intellectual to have been finding the words that would piss so many people off that they didn't think for a second of proving me wrong. They didn't think for a second of proving my theory wrong or my statements about politics or history or right wing or left wing or whatever. No, instead, you have this whole section of your brain dedicated at believing lies about me. It's like, wake up, guys. Wake up. If I was a rapist, there would be documentation of this. I would be in a jail. At some point in my life, I would have passed in front of a judge. Didn't happen. Max Cash says, she just left her kids behind. Oh, well, I don't provide the details about... I don't provide details about my family, but yes, I am at this point a single dad and very happy in life, very happy in life. I went today to a routine medical exam. Maybe there's some rebalancing of some medication to do, but I think I'll be pretty healthy and I will continue to be relatively okay, productively engaged in my life, both on the internet, hopefully with the current separation. I don't know. Does that get me into a point where I can work on the moral signal, the game? That would all be very interesting. I'd like to produce other things before I die. I wouldn't want just my videos and my book to be the only things left. So I would like at least another book or a 3D game. A 3D game, that would be fun. Rodilla said, says, JF, if the RCMP thinks she is dead, could they contact Google or Hotmail to gain access to her email? Well, I'm sure they already did. I'm sure they already did because they said that they used a new law about disappeared person that give the police extra powers. They probably had more power to trace Mama JF than they would have had in a criminal investigation for murder. Because they used a new Canadian law, and I saw the police was bragging about this publicly on some Facebook post, maybe, that it is a priority case and a high profile a high profile case, and that they had made use for the first time of this new law that gives them like absolute AI power in the cases of disappearance. So I don't know what that means. I don't know what, but I'm absolutely sure they must have had access to any emails. I would be surprised if they didn't. Frog Eyes says, JF, how's the minivan you bought recently treating you? The Dodge Caravan has been great. Today I did my change of oil. Dodge Caravan 2016, working perfectly. I had to change a thermostat of the engine because the thermostat was just broken and the radiator was cooling too much the engine. And so it was not at the optimal temperature. Just change of the thermostat is the only thing I had to do that was serious. And then the engine is running perfectly. I've been very happy. The space is amazing for the whole family. You get space for the family, for friends, for packing up groceries. There's really a lot of extra. On top of it, it's the Dodge Grand Caravan. So it has actually an extra length of about this long. Extra length in the back that gives a luggage space even with the 7 seats. So that is the breeder's special Dodge Caravan. This is when you know you have succeeded in life. When you need a 7-seater. Marby Dog says, JF is receiving new Canadian powers. No, not me, the police, though they are. DocU says, on her last appearance on the show, she seemed a bit crazy and excited, and you were not okay with it. I don't know exactly what was her last appearance on the show, but it is true that at the end, Mama JF was becoming very, very defiant of my authority, trying to mess up my show at times, trying to... You know, there are rules. There are rules about my show. There is no featuring of any family member. There is no leaking of private information. And you know, Mama JF, in her probably psychotic, crazy brain, kind of wanted to mess up something before she leaves. Like that's. Mama JF likes to mess up before she before she moves. So yes, you may have seen these moments where Mama JF tries to show herself for information on the camera, and I have to stop the show. I have to black out the screen. So that's probably moments that you are referring to. Thank you so much for the super chat, KFure420. He says, thank you for the follow, Professor. Well, thanks to you for your support. Super chats are available on Rumble. Perhaps we'll have super chats back one day on YouTube. I don't know. Bluetooth says, Jeff, good gravy recipe, please. Bro. My grandma was doing an amazing gravy. An amazing gravy with pork meatballs in it. Now, get prepared. The gravy requires the pulling of strings from an entire pork roast. So I cannot give you the exact ingredients, but because I don't have the quantities and all. But basically, the gravy was based in a mix of broth, butter, flour, and a fully cooked pork roast that you cook in the oven, that you then split in little pulled pork style lines of meat. And this was kind of integrated into the stew. So you had a stew that was extremely thick. I mean, the thickness of my grandma's stew. That was something. It's still, you know, it's a meatballs too that we call it in Quebec, and it's a very Quebecois thing at Christmas to be eating turkey with brown sauce, with mashed potatoes, with meat pie, with beets, and with ragout de boulette, which is meatballs too. If you can find the ragout de boulette, R-A-G-O-U-T, search for the Quebecois recipe for ragout de boulette, and then add to this the idea of my grandma, which was to pull a roast of pork into the sauce. So you had strings of pork that was literally forming the brown sauce. And yes, they call it a roux in French cuisine, but we call it a ragout. The Deaf Cries says, Jeff, what do you think of cryonics / biostasis? Would you sign up to be frozen? I really don't like these ideas. In general, I don't like the idea of extending life. I don't like the idea of fighting nature. I do not like the idea of fighting entropy. There's all sorts of reason why I don't like it. It's like there is something that I appreciate about life being finite. And people keep sending me hate tweets when you know, on the second of someone dying, if it's a biologist, I will write the most shitty eulogy ever. And I will insult them just like I insulted Jane Goodall on the day of her death yesterday or 2 days ago. And so I made a tweet explaining, look, Jane Goodall is a product of the academic left that wanted to have scientist woman. But she is not. She has not made an important contribution to ethology. Literally, you can just abolish her work, and ethology is actually better. Because this whole idea that chimpanzees, oh my God, tool use, is already a misinterpretation that there's something special there. It misses the fact that, you know, you can get birds to use tools. You can get a crow to use tool. I retweeted recently a picture of a crow using tools. And then the idea of war, well, she has explored war in chimpanzee groups. You know, there's war in insects. There's war in birds. There's war in deers. Everything is war. There's competition among the males and among the females across the entire animal kingdom. So this idea that by looking at war in chimpanzee, you're somehow getting more insight into societal war in humans, it's all a fool's errand. And if she has done anything in science, it's that. She has observed some chimpanzee behavior and then has kind of let the scientists and the rest of the academia assume that this was something special. But it's a big error. It's a big error to see the chimpanzee line as being particularly relevant to humans. Because you could have, in principle, you could have a bunch of lobsters fighting, and the math of the lobsters fighting would be closer to humans than the math of the chimpanzees fighting. You know what I'm saying? Because you have, if you look across the great apes and their proximity to human behavior, of course, the chimpanzees are the closest genetically. But then you look at the societal structures, and then you have the orangutans, that have some kind of weird reproductive, like, communist system of everyone fucks everyone. You have the, you know, tribal kind of group-like, and you have hierarchical forms of preference for breeding down to rhesus macaques and across the chimpanzees and the gorillas, where dominance plays a lot of roles. And it's like you have this very shotgun image of very various sexual traditions or lifestyles or ways to do in species that are supposed to all be the closest to humanity, which makes you conclude these groups are different enough that they have taken their own evolutionary path. And they have drifted in ways that is kind of independent of the fact that they are genetically close. They can be genetically close, but they have lived for millions of years in a different enough breeding scheme that they will be extremely different from us. And the same applies to war and chimpanzees. You're not going to learn about Israel and the U.S. by looking at a bunch of chimpanzees fighting for a banana. Now, there is a principle. There are principles that are wide applying to all wars. And they will apply to the lobster. They will apply to the chimpanzees. And they will apply to the humans. The concepts of property. The concepts of first claimer. And the concepts, the elementary concepts of private property, not in its legal form, but in its natural form. Now, this is all interesting, but the chimpanzees aren't particularly more interesting than whatever else you could study. So Jane Goodall not only was not particularly insightful in understanding war, she has merely described it. She was not a particularly insightful theoretician. You know, when you read a John Maynard Smith, a Robert Rivers, these guys had a fine understanding that there is always a trade-off. That, you know, they will explain war to you as a balance of mathematical forces. Jane Goodall wasn't capable of doing this, so she doesn't really have an insightful contribution to science. And yet the left, and this is the last, I hope that this is the last generation of hippie scientists that are basically elevated because it was a cute blonde, you know, okay, maybe you've not seen Jane Goodall when she was young, but she was cute and sexy. So isn't it nice to have a cute blonde woman become an expert and a face for wisdom? Because one of the things that the left and the feminist and the Marxist have been enraged about forever is the fact that wisdom is a masculine thing. Like, no one, literally no one, gives a shit about what a 60-year-old woman thinks. It is frustrating for some of them. Like, no, like, are there shows run by 60-year-old women that are presenting themselves as 60-year-old women and that are popular? No. What you have is a Megyn Kelly, like, who's literally been sculpted through plastic surgery into a 14-year-old Russian gymnast. So basically, the signal, the I'm a 60-year-old woman means, and this is what frustrates the left, it means non-wisdom. It means fucking retardation. It means I don't want to hear it. And Jane Goodall was an active attempt, and I would even claim further than I claimed in my tweet that she was the first DEI employee ever. She was the first But because if I go hang out like cute boy JF with fucking chimpanzees in the jungle, no one will give a shit. No one will give a shit. There's no way I can develop a career. Saying, oh, look, the chimpanzees like me. They kiss me. No, but that is what they developed with Jane Goodall. That is what they did. Rudy Lacid says, Jane Goodall with chimpanzees, Diane Fossey with the gorillas. Both of these women have chosen the bear and go to live in the jungle. Yes. Sean Stedman says, Jeff, do you believe there are monkey people walking the earth in some third world villages? I mean, there is always a kind of missing link. There is always the one human. At any moment in time, listen to this. This is wicked biology, okay? Too hot for TV. At any moment in time, there is one individual in your species that is the most distant from the entirety of your species. Let's call him the black sheep. There is, if you have a group of cows, and therefore you have an average cow genetics, there's one cow in your group that is the most different from this average. And that cow is the black sheep. She is the cow that is the most bizarre in your group. Now, this is true of all groups. It's true even of mathematics and statistics. You know, in a shape, in any irregular polygon, you have a point that is the most distant from the middle. The only exception is that you may have more than one point. If you have a circle, for example, the entirety of the points onto the circumference of the circle are equally distant to the middle. But in an irregular polygon, imagine a shape like this. There is a peak that's the furthest from the middle. Runes Wandering says, could you expand that to groups? Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, and he says, oh, yeah, also, yes, absolutely, yeah. There is a white person that is the least white person ever. There is a black person somewhere that is the least black person, the most European white black person in the history of black people. Thought criminal. And so the consequences for your question are, yes, there is one human being currently on planet Earth that is the closest genetically to a monkey. But that doesn't mean that he's much close to a monkey, you know, because we've been separated from monkeys long enough that he's going to be very much closer to the human average than the monkey average. But definitely that guy that you hypothesized must exist. There must be one human that is the most monkey-like human ever. Thought Criminal says, Jeff, have you heard of Travis the Chimp? He was a domesticated chimpanzee that lived with this woman and ripped her friend's face off. Adam Lanza compared his psychology to that of Travis. I didn't know about the Adam Lanza thing. But yeah, I know about this woman who kept a chimpanzee and lost her face for it. Yeah, definitely chimpanzees are very dangerous. They can be unpredictable and they can just decide that you're on the other team now. So yes, you can't interact with chimpanzees too carelessly. Now, there are people who just develop good enough friendships with the chimpanzee that they feel like Jane Goodall. You have a lot of pictures of her just standing side by side with the chimpanzees. it's kind of dangerous, but because she knew the behavior, and especially if you raise them from their youth, they consider you some kind of a parental figure, a friendly figure that they will not attack most of the time. Matt Bell says, David Lammy is who you are thinking of, JF. I don't know who that is. I don't know. Poca Pilot says, JF, how much do you think human behavior impacts racial differences? Like the impact of different ways of life, going from hunter-gatherers to agriculture, etc., compared to environmental impact. Well, it is a very contorted and bizarre question. You are asking me how human behavior impacts racial differences. Are you asking me, basically, are the racial differences farmed into existence by the culture? Because I do think they are to an extent. I mean, but not in a way where the culture matters that much. Let's not forget that the culture is nothing else than an ecological niche. And the ecological niche farms into itself the genes that will exploit that ecological niche well for the purpose of reproduction. So the ecological niche is both a product of genes, and it is ultimately an influencer of genes. Let's just develop a theoretical example to illustrate. So you have a pond. There's enough food in the pond that frogs. Let's say there's enough food in the pond that insects start gathering around, drinking that water, benefiting from the various sources of micronutrients they can find around the pond. Now there's insects. So the insects they've been following their own selfish gene reproductive interest, and they have grown toward liking the pond and living among the pond and producing lots of babies around the pond because it's a good niche where they have their micronutrients. Now there's insects. Now this, in turn, this is both. Now, stop seeing it from the perspective of the insect and start seeing it from the perspective of the ecological niche. The niche now offers insects as potential prey. So now frogs show up, and perhaps when there were no insects, the frogs were not capable of living there. But now the frogs are capable of living in that pond because they have more food available. There is plenty of insects to eat. The frogs are starting to like it. Now the frogs reproduce and they grow. Now you have an equilibrium. The more there are frogs, the more they eat the insects. The more the insects are low population, the costlier it gets for a frog to catch them. The frogs grow. The insects go down. The insects go up. The frogs go down. It balances like this, and you end up with some evolutionary stable equilibrium. Now, the same is true of the influence of culture on racial differences or on any characteristics genetically in humans. The culture that's out there is a product, just like the insects. It's part of the ecological niche. It wasn't there at some point, but then eventually it came to be there. Maybe because some people are unleashing these cultural influences, maybe the parents, maybe the uncles, the whole of the community, the political environment. These are ecological niches, changes that occur, and they do influence whether there will be frogs in the pond or not. They do influence what will happen with the genetic direction of the population. Now let's move from our pond with frogs and insects to a theoretical human society. Suppose there is a human society in which violence is omnipresent, in which theft is just every day. You cannot even expect to keep something for 24 hours. If you leave it on your lawn, it's going to be gone by the next day. if you have a car, someone's going to come and pick it up and take it from you. Now, that is an ecological niche. It is that way because there are other violent people around you. But as a result, you are not allowed to evolve in certain directions. You can't really develop intelligence because intelligence serves nothing. You're just gonna survive. Whether or not you survive is not due to your intelligence. It's about how violent you are. And therefore, you don't grow into an intelligent direction. And anyways, intelligence would serve you nothing in that society because if you produce something that is good, it's going to be stolen from you the next day. So you have a society that is pulling at the bottom from violence. You have a society that can't grow. Any sense of property, any sense of intelligence won't grow because the evolutionary niche is not there. It's not available. Now imagine an alternative society in which people are faced with a colder climate. They live further away from each other. The colder climate makes it impractical for systematic theft to exist. The challenges of nature are so big compared to the challenges of the human world that you end up having an interest in collaborative survival of the winter rather than competitive. Suppose that there is less violence in this world because the distance between people, the nuclear family in this society, the fact that people live in separate houses that are fortified and hard to penetrate, all of this helps. It creates an ecological niche where intelligence can develop, where law can develop, where a sense of private property can develop. So yes, ultimately, the culture of the races changes the races. The culture of the environment, the ecological niche, the society in which you live will end up impacting what you become evolutionarily. Very important question. The Giga Doomer sends a super chat. He says, have you heard of the experiment where two white parents decided to raise a chimp with their white son in the 30s? It seems very similar to what we do in integration of different groups of humanity. I've never heard about this experiment. I don't think so. I don't think I've heard.
Salut du Québec, JF. Two questions. Where in QC are you from? And how are you not Catholic yet? Not Yanrish de Catholicism, I mean real Catholicism, the fullness of truth. You already basically believe all its social teachings for a start.
Well, when am I becoming a Catholic? Probably never. But at the same time, I am officially a Catholic right now. I have received my baptism in the Catholic Church. I have done my first communion. I have done all of the steps of the Catholic Church to be a confirmed Catholic. I've done my confirmation. So, well, why Catholic and not Christianity, says Sean Stedman. Well, because all of these things were done to me when I was a child in Quebec. And in Quebec, it is Catholicism, at least for the French population. And my whole line of ancestry were all Catholic farmers up to France. So there was no other faith that I could converge to. It was the choice. It was what was chosen for me by my parents. Now, I still respect Christianity, but I have a problem, which is I don't believe in God. So, I just don't believe in God. And I recognize that, it would be easier to live life as a Catholic or a Christian in general. It would be easier. Perhaps it would get me women that are more honest, although I have seen with the last one that honesty is only displayed in Christianity. It is not lived. You know, there are these psychopaths existing that claim to be Christians. And they will backstab you harder, even harder. They will backstab you with the perfectionism of a Christian, but not with the morality of one. So I'm like, okay, I have acquired this status as a Catholic at a time where I wasn't able to consent at this point in my life, and I do not see this changing. I do not believe in God. I do not believe in God in the sense of a supra-universal force that is agentic and that decides things and orders things. I do believe in the practicality of religion, and I believe it may be a needed tool for the low IQs. But I think that if you are intelligent enough, I'm not talking 110 IQ here. I'm talking 130, 140 IQ. If you're intelligent enough to be able to explain the entirety of the moral world and everything that we are with evolution, you don't really need God. God is really there for the people who can't figure it out. It helps in that case, and perhaps God is there, maybe useful in 99% of the cases of people. Maybe 99% of people need God. They need some sort of false feeling that there is some entity out there that is seeing their actions and judging them. Maybe that helps. Maybe it makes better societies. I'm sure it does. But there is no function for me to claim Christianity or to claim Catholicism, because what would that serve me? I consider that I have an explanation for the entire world as it stands. There is nothing in the world that is better explained by Christianity than by a theist view, a God-based view. Nothing, literally, there is not a thing in the world that is better explained by God. So I have no reason to believe in God. And people, you know, it's so sad. I don't even want to win that debate. You know, it's beyond... I'm not like Richard Dawkins. I don't want to convince people of that. But it is so sad that they seem to need it. They seem to need God because they can't figure out, hey, you know, the beauty of what people like me can see. I can see how you get to a moral society, to a society that claims to have morals. I can see how you get to a... In fact, I don't find human society to be so complex as people think it is. It's not that complex, and it's not that beautiful, and it's not that moral. And it's a little more chimpanzees shooting rocks at each other, you know, crushing each other's cranium with the biggest rock. It's a little more that than people want to claim. And this need for, well... I've heard someone else say that there was a God. They were very convincing. They were saying, believe in the name of Jesus Christ. And I will repeat this, and other humans repeat this. And then it becomes kind of a slogan, a thing that people say because they've heard it. It is quite shocking and notable how the Christians, you know, when they try to convince you, they will say the kind of thing that they heard from a pastor. They will repeat. They will just repeat. kind of stupidly, you need Jesus. You need Jesus in your heart. I don't know. I love the history of Jesus. I love what Jesus did in this temple with the tables and all. Good job, Jesus. But I don't know that I need to deceive myself into thinking that I can talk with the soul of someone who's dead. I don't think I need to deceive myself into this whole concept of heaven and an agentic God. Because I think that God and heavens is a stand-in for Christians, for the idea of eternity. But it started as a stand-in. I believe the way you can interpret heaven in a realistic, scientific way is heaven is not a place. You don't have a soul. You're not going there. You're not going to live there forever. You can think of heaven as the blockchain of the historical record of everything that has been done on planet Earth. And you can think of yourself as leaving a permanent imprint. A permanent imprint in that blockchain forever. Like when you think of your good deeds and your good actions and you want to be good to reach heaven, you want to leave that permanent record, that trace of a man that was once good, of a man that once pursued the truth. I believe that's kind of roughly what heaven should be thought as in a realistic way and pragmatic way. Heaven is not a place above the clouds. Heaven can be seen as the historical record, and we all will leave our imprint in it forever. And what we have done on Earth will be imprinted into heaven and forever there. And in that sense, heaven gives you permanence. Heaven gives you eternal life. But I think that historically, maybe the people who came up with religious concepts like heaven were much more like me, much closer to me and this pragmatic historical view. Because when you see how they speak of heaven in the Bible, and even if you hear modern believers talk about it, it's very much in line with the idea of the record of deeds. It's a record of deeds. You know, the doors of heaven will be open to those who do this and that and this and that and who believe this and that. So it's kind of a hall of fame. It's a hall of fame. Heaven. Like, literally, it's probably how it started. And hell is the opposite. It is the idea of a hall of shame. A hall of shame. But somewhere in the religious tradition, I believe that the sense got lost. And people started having this modern conception of heaven and hell, at least for the believers, as a physical location in which your soul would actually pursue its existence and pursue the capacity to feel. I don't think that's even what was intended originally. Rapier says, JF, imagine a justice-devoid universe when no ultimate justice is to come and wherein no good deeds or ultimate recompenses is rendered. A prescription for hopelessness. Well, no. Yes. I reject this conception. I reject this conception that the nihilistic, atheistic view of the universe is hopeless. In fact, I believe to the contrary. It is the only one with a glimmer of hope. It is the only one with a glimmer of hope. Because consider if everything that we are is explainable by rules of evolution that literally stem from mud. Literally, we were once just little bits of mud, and some replicator just started a loop and developed into eventually a virus-like thing, a bacteria-like thing, and eventually animals, and eventually humans. I find much more hope in the fact that this entire trajectory has been accomplishable within the universe and by the rules of nature without violation. It's much more depressing to think that we had to be shaped willfully, engineered into existence, basically. If we had to be engineered by will, then what we are is unchangeable. And there is no better space, you know, in the multi-dimensional space of what we could be, what we could become in the future. There is not much choice. We've already been prescribed, you're going to be that way. You're going to have that amount of violence in human society. You're going to have that amount of injustice, that amount of betrayal. And this was all decided by an engineer who wanted to leave us the freedom to choose somehow among all these options. I find it much more hopeful to think, wow, if we made all the way to what we are today from mud, and we were all the things in between, we were monkeys, we were wolves, we were hamsters, we were octopuses, then we could be and we could have been so many other things. And there is so much place for improvement. And Thought Criminal says, JF is a transhumanist now. No, I say, let's not go there through the transhumanist route. But the fact that even the delusion of honesty, that it could rise from mud, this should give you some hope. Just the idea that you could even have the concept in your head of maybe honesty, maybe principles, maybe kindness, maybe. Just the fact that this could arise from nothing and shaped itself because it was better, that should give you much hope about the world. I don't know how you don't see that hope. You don't want to see that hope. For those of you who say, well, the non-religious view is hopeless, I'd rather a real hope in what we really can demonstrate than a delusion of hope. Because delusions of hope are way too easy. Joe Rinaldi says, JF, how about common stories of exorcists, demon possession, those that can speak languages that have no knowledge of the language, levitations, all this BS by the Catholic Church? Well, I don't know what you're asking me. Do I believe those? No. Demon possession, let me tell you, I've done a couple of exorcists myself without believing neither in demon nor in gods, okay? Like, actually, I have a video. Now that you ask about exorcism.
Never. I've seen her out on the street.
Where'd she come from?
Here's a woman on bat salt.
We come out to do the yard and she was out here. She's got some of her stuff flopping around.
I've never seen a man on
the street. And you saw her in this house? The young boy in that house was walking to her.
What, was talking to her?
What? Yeah. He was talking to her. He was talking to her. He was talking to her.
Of course, if you're in the 16th century and you see this, or you see some of my exes, you're going to have the impression that there's a demon in them. And it's just not a demon. It's just they are evil and they are broken and they are on drug. And yes, they are chemical malfunction. Yeah, because we are machines, there are malfunctions and there are forces inside of us that are either making us twitch like her or making us morally betray someone else or making us deeply evil, and you don't need a demon to invoke any of this. Chan Stedman says, Papa, what is your theory for how anything exists at all? Like, how is space, time, or matter a thing? I said that is the ultimate question that we don't have an answer to. We don't have a valid answer to it. I've been wondering about it, and I've been even commenting about it in the Revolutionary Phenotype at some point. Kind of indirectly, honestly. But, you know, I had this question in mind when I wrote some of these words. Let me find it. Confronting the problem of embedded life forms requires us to step back from the classical training we receive in biology classes and consider what it means for life forms to fabricate other life forms within their phenotypes. If one limits biology to be the study of modern DNA organisms on Earth, then questions regarding the origin of DNA transcend the scope of biology. This negotiation between what a given science can and cannot address resembles a discussion that often emerges between physicists and philosophers, where the philosopher asks, what are the laws that underlie the laws of physics? To avoid an obvious infinite regress, the physicist is bound to answer, I'm not an expert on that subject, I only study physics. But consider a hypothetical answer that the physicist may provide. Physics exists because of the laws of W. The laws of W provide a clear and concise explanation of why the laws of physics apply to the universe. The philosopher could then respond, oh, I didn't know about the laws of W. What are the laws that underlie the laws of W? Here, W stands for any sort of science or whatever explanation is deemed sufficient within a given domain. Such a discussion presents a dual fatality, that the existence of physics is either ultimately inexplicable. See, that's where you ask, why is there anything existing at all? Well, there you go. In this duality right here that I captured in those paragraphs, there is either the existence of physics is ultimately inexplicable, or there is a ultimate question hiding in the murky depth, which could one day be uncovered by the philosopher. The answer to this ultimate question would be a theory of everything. What should we expect from a theory of everything? First and foremost, it should provide an explanation for its own existence. Otherwise, it cannot be a theory of everything. It can only be a theory of everything else. This is why none of the modern theories of physics will ever qualify as a theory of everything. Whether we are talking about quantum physics or string theory, one can still ask why quantum fields exist or what allows the existence of these strings. The theories in their current state remain silent on these questions. And here I suggest that the only theory that I know to be self-explanatory in such a simple form is basically the theory of evolution with the supplement of the theory of phenotypic revolutions. Because what did I do with the theory of phenotypic revolutions? Well, I showed how you create replicators. And the answer to this, to it, is you need replicators to create new replicators. And you can call the new replicator a revolutionary phenotype. That to me is a loop. It's a loop in the theory of evolution that is closed by the theory of phenotypic revolution. Replicators, basically, and their property are self-amplifying. You start with a small one that's protein-based. It creates an RNA life form for you. The RNA life form continues. It creates a DNA life form for you. replicators create replicators. And maybe at the heart of physics and the questions of existence that you raise, and this will be our closing words for today, maybe there's something to be extracted from this. I think perhaps there is a way to think of non-existence as necessarily eventually demanding some sort of replicator. Maybe there's something about quantum Darwinism and the idea that the quantum world is kind of a carpet layer of replication systems. That in the quantum world, things aren't yet replicated. Once they become kind of confirmed by observation, confirmed by the world, they start replicating information in a kind of infinite way. They start having infinite descendants. Perhaps there is ultimately something about the theory of phenotypic revolution that will inform physics down the line. And this is where I'm speculating in the book, where I say maybe we'll think of the quantum layer of physics as being the last layer of the genetic code. We tend to think that it's DNA, RNA, proteins. We might very well one day, if quantum Darwinism is true, we might very well one day see the quantum layer as being the last determinant, the last cause in the chain from DNA to RNA to proteins and then to the quantum world and to all of the chemical operations that proteins are doing. So I don't have an answer for your question, why is there anything that exists at all? You can think also of it as a form of mathematical realism. You could say, well, if you could say that there is structure, in even the idea of numbers, and that just out there, without any substrate, force, or containment, there is some mathematical reality that instantiated itself into nothingness and that gave birth. And perhaps we don't even exist. That's another hypothesis. I'm just laying them out here. I'm not saying I believe one more than the others, but just laying out the possibilities. You could think that, okay, well, we're literally in the computer of a god that simulated our universe. That's kind of one layer of embedded universe. Now, the problem of that explanation is that you then have to explain the existence of the God. So you haven't solved the problem of existence. You can have a kind of mathematical realism view of existence where you say something in mathematics was implying some relationship that eventually self-amplified into the construction of a 3D space or the construction of the universe as we know it. You can also have the view that we don't really exist and that basically it's just that because we're a possible configuration, that possibility is instantiated in nothing. And you could have the view that we're just experiencing one of the possible universes that could have been. And that the mere fact that it's possible, that it had to happen, that it gives rise to these virtual Boltzmann brain of sort that we are. The fact that we were possible was enough for us to exist. I don't have much more to say. I think those are philosophical questions that are very hard to answer. I think they may be unanswerable in many ways. Just some fucking guy says, Big Bang, simple explanation. A superior agent created a complex simulation that we live in, or rather have emerged in due to the natural forces and rules of the simulation. Oh yeah, it's entirely possible. You could think that the universe is just implemented literally in a computer by some sort of a god, basically just an agent who decided to run that simulation. And perhaps the parameters of the universe were configured by this agent to give some likeliness of life emerging. They were just being walked through the simulation. The Flying Gospel says, JF, in response to my PED chat, you talked of IQ. I have a clinically measured IQ of 151 and converted to Catholicism from agnosticism. God is existence itself. God is being not a being. Yeah, you know, fuck off. Just kiss my fucking ass, you narcissistic, self-obsessed, intelligence-measuring retards. You are more retarded than a retard. This disgusts me when people come to me, JF, the most intelligent guy is a Chinese guy, and guess what? He's Christian. Your IQ means nothing. Your IQ means nothing. There's not even evidence that IQ helps you find the truth better. It's like, if you're not an important scientist, you're not someone who has had insight into anything specific, the medical measure of your IQ is worth shit. You are worth shit. Because you have nothing demonstrated. All you have is this theoretical brain processing power that in many ways is dumber than a rock. It just illustrates the amount of speed you can process questions and follow rules. It doesn't tell me that you will find the truth better. In fact, there are many things that fool intelligent people more than they fool dumb people. And the classic meme is the whole, you know, the two sides of the curve. There is such a thing as the trade-off that you lose from being intelligent. One of them, you're more likely to be gay. And what you're telling me there, this whole implication that, wow, you have this intelligence and you have reached a definition of God that you find self-consistent, that is gay.